Marlborough Street. Isabel last seen here, 10:45 p.m. approx. No CCTV outside. Landlord has delivered internal closed circuit to be examined. Cab firms pick up at the Farmer's Arms, but no one matching Isabel's description and no one giving her name. Boyfriend, Andrew Harper, interview 11 a.m. today. Head injury man, question mark. Lomax Associates, none so far, no criminal or gang links, no known adversaries. Prison visitors, mother, lawyer. Witnesses, Ray Clark, question mark. And then a single name that she didn't recognise. Martin Coombs. Alex joined her. We've got CCTV from inside the pub. We're running it through facial recognition software now. Landlord says what happens outside isn't his business. Lots of the regulars know Isabel. No one saw anything out of the ordinary. What's the family situation? Kira asked. Mum upped and left 15 years ago, no siblings. Mr. Marsden works long hours. Saw her off at the door night before last. Said she seemed happy and relaxed. She was looking forward to seeing her friends. He says she's a good girl, studies hard in a nursing course, sensible head on her shoulders. He says she never stays out without telling him. Family liaison are at the house. Search turned up nothing. Who's Martin Coombs? Will managed to trace one visitor from the time Lomax was held on remand, Alex explained. Before he was sentenced and ended up at Rockwell, Coombs was an apprentice mechanic at Lomax's garage on Gresham Road between 2004 and 2006. We can't find anything on the police system to suggest he was in any way dodgy, but we are trying to trace him so that we can collect a bio sample to rule him out. But Lomax's DNA has been confirmed on Kaylee's body, Alex said with a shrug. He's been framed. Gut instinct, Kira explained without looking at her. I'm not convinced, said Alex, her eyes on the board. Some poor cow will die soon if we don't get this sorted. The words hit Kira like a blow to the stomach. She tried not to react, but the exhaustion, the stress of trying to get Tom on board, the implication that Emma had been only some poor cow, all came crashing together. Her throat started to close up, her chest tightening, her breaths shortening. She rummaged in her pocket for the inhaler, which she kept close at all times now. She took two puffs. Tears began springing from her eyes. She tried to turn away before Alex saw what state she was in, and when she could no longer hold it together, she escaped from the hub to the toilet. Locking a cubicle door behind her, she lowered the toilet seat and sat down. The inhaler allowed her airways to open enough to let the wailing escape. When she heard the door, she choked back her distress and put her hand to her mouth to stifle a sob. It's me, Alex. Kira could see the shadow in the gap beneath the cubicle door. Would she go away if she didn't reply? Alex knocked gently on the door. You all right? The kindness in her voice added to Kira's feeling of misery. Let me in. She wasn't going to go. Kira leaned forward, unlocked the door, and it swung open slowly. Alex opened her mouth and closed it again. She smoothed her hair back and tried again. Did I say something wrong? Kira glanced over to the wide mirror above the sinks in front of her. She could see Alex's plait hanging down her back, her hand on the cubicle door. One of the taps was running, the thin trickling turning into a gurgle as it disappeared down the plug hole. She bit her lip. What would Alex think of her if she told her the truth? Would she march right out of the bathroom and tell the DCI, get her kicked off the case, get Tom into trouble? Or would it help to tell Alex? Would she see Kira for who she really was then, not someone who wanted to take her place in the boss's estimations, but someone who was trying to find justice on a personal level? It was a gamble. He killed my sister. She took a staggered breath. Emma. Saying the words out loud felt like a bereavement all over again. But it also steeled her as though out of the haze of sorrow and sleeplessness, there was a goal in the distance, giving her meaning, direction. Alex's face fell. She pointed a thumb towards the door. The girl from the board? Yes. She bent down on her haunches and blew out heavily. Her eyes settled on Kira's. There's me, thinking you were some smart-ass consultant. She briefly rubbed Kira's hand. Her fingers were cold. It felt odd but comforting. I am so sorry. Kira pulled tissues from the roll and wiped her face. Jesus, this must be so hard for you. Alex's words galvanized her. She didn't want to be a victim. She wanted justice. I want to get him, Alex. I want to sort this mess out. She leaned closer to her. For Emma, for those women. It made her even more determined to get Tom to agree to her plan. Was that admiration Kira could see in her eyes? Alex studied her for a moment, weighing her up. Kira had done it hundreds of times herself, as a psychologist. She put her chin up, her shoulders back in defiance of her personal situation. Let's do it then, Alex said, standing up. I'll give you a few minutes. Wash your face and, when you're ready, I'll see you back in the hub. She paused at the door and turned back. Let's get him. And then she left Kira alone. There was a shift in the atmosphere between them, a lightening of the tension. They were in this together now, bonded in secrecy. She took a couple of deep breaths, stood up and went over to the sink. She bent over, splashing her face with running water, feeling it cooling her skin. As she turned the tap off and stood back up, she reached over blindly for the paper towels to dry her face. Something brushed her hand. She opened her eyes, the water immediately running into them and blurring her vision. Someone was standing next to her. Alex? But it was too small to be Alex. Grabbing at the towels, she patted her face quickly. When she looked again, she saw the boy from Brownrigg's memory standing next to her. Anger blazing in his eyes, his white garments covered in desert sand. He was holding the curved, rusted knife and her body froze in terror, even though her mind knew he wasn't really there. She couldn't move a muscle, even as he drew his arm backwards, ready to attack. She felt the burn of the blade and the boy spun on his heels and ran out of the bathroom door. As the door closed, a single gunshot rang loudly in the corridor. Kira looked at her reflection, horrified to see blood seeping from the gash in her throat into the collar of her white shirt. The bathroom light flickered off briefly, and when they came on again, the blood disappeared. She touched her neck. Her fingers were clean. Christ, Kira, pull yourself together. She leaned over, hands either side of the sink for a few moments, breathing deeply. There was no way she was going to let the team see her like this. She waited until the panic and nausea had died down, then stood up straight and faced herself in the mirror. She pinched her cheeks to get a bit of colour, then held her head up and made her way back to the hub. 10:23 a.m. Martin Coombs. I remember him so clearly. As a child, I wished that he'd been my big brother. He was probably 10 years older, but with similar dark hair and blue eyes to me. He was an apprentice. He told me that was someone who learned as they went along. I've had to learn as I go along. Learn how to plant evidence, track my prey, hide my movements. I wonder how different my life would have been if Martin Coombs had been my big brother. Would he have stopped that man from being so cruel to us? Would he have taken the beatings for us? Would he have been able to save Elise? Martin Coombs was kind to me. He used to give me biscuits sometimes when that man wouldn't let me eat. He would slip me 50p pieces and pound coins with a wink and put his fingers to his lips. The bastard told the mechanics to ignore me when I came home from school, forbade them to speak to me, and they obeyed. All besides Martin Coombs. Our house was on the same plot of land as the garage. The bastard only stayed with my mother because of the yard. I know that now. Somewhere he could live for free, use the land for his business, use her. It was such a lovely place. In the country, she used to say, even though it was only a few miles from the city. We used to play in the fields nearby. We had a vegetable patch and my mother grew roses. Before she met him, my mother was devoted to us. She would play games with us, take us on long walks and tell us all the names of the flowers and birds. We were the centre of her world, me and Elise, before he came and cut all the roses down to build his garage. After he was arrested, I wanted to go to the prison. I wanted to look him in the eye and tell him what I had done. What I had done for Elise. What I had done for revenge. But I knew there was no way he would have agreed to let me visit. Why would he let his ex-girlfriend's kid visit? I didn't think he would even have remembered my name. So, I pretended to be Martin Coombs, the man who knew how cruel and destructive the bastard really was, the man who gave me hope that things could be different. When I faced him in jail, I felt 8 years old again. Even he thought I was Martin at first too, like the screws. The photo ID was pretty convincing, and of course, Martin's biochip under my skin couldn't lie. It hadn't been easy, getting that chip. I had grown to look so much like the man who had been kind to me. The bastard only recognised me because of my scar. A craftsman always recognises his own handiwork. I had wanted to go and tell him what I had done, that it was me who followed him in the darkness, killed the women, planted the evidence to make it look like he had done it, that after all these years I was going to make him suffer for what he had done to me, to Elise. But before I could say any of this, he laughed. He told me I was a weak, worthless shite who deserved to die like my little sister. And then I couldn't tell him what I had done. I couldn't speak at all. I pissed myself, right in front of him. And I ran away like a child, like the 8-year-old I had been. I went out that night and beat a man senseless purely because he looked similar to the bastard. It took me a while to get over the humiliation, but once I had, I promised myself that I would continue to punish him, whatever it took, however long it took. After Elise died, my mother couldn't go on. The authorities believed that man's lies, and it was recorded as an accidental death, although my mother was under suspicion of neglect. She never recovered. When I was 10 years old, my mother took her own life, and everything I had ever loved was gone. But part of me still blames her, too. It was a shame what happened to Martin Coombs. After all, he was one of the very few adults who had ever been kind to me. His last act of kindness was to give me his biochip. Well, I took it. But it was Martin who gave me the chance to get revenge. And I grabbed that chance with both hands. Chapter 21. Sunday, 4th of February, 2035, 10:47 a.m. Tom looked exhausted as he scrolled down the screen at his desk. Reading his body language, Kira surmised he wasn't in the right mood, but they were running out of time. Now that she had made her mind up, she didn't want to wait too long before she went through with it. She braced herself. Tom? I've got an idea that might help. It's totally unorthodox, and I'm not 100% certain how successful it might be, but... She shifted her weight from one foot to the other. He glanced up at her, but she could tell he was distracted. After I left the behavioural science department, I don't know if you know. I went on to focus purely on neuropathy. I changed from looking at links between criminal behaviour and psychology to looking at the possibility that there were neurological reasons for criminal behaviour, actual physical problems in the brain that could somehow be diagnosed. Sick of mopping up the mess, so you went into prevention instead, he said, looking back down at his screen briefly. He got it. She was reminded of one of the slogans from the institute where she had conducted most of her research. If we can predict, we can prevent. Exactly. She sat down on the other side of his desk and he faced her properly now. Is that how you ended up in Carter Tech? Was he interested or just humouring her? Yes, I needed the sort of money Carter had to turn the research into reality. She wasn't exactly proud of that. He rubbed his earlobe. She could tell he was itching to study his report, but she pressed on. I discovered that it is possible to retrieve memories from the brain's cortex, whole, unabridged, accurate. I developed a technology that can do this. He didn't react. Had he heard what she had said? I want to use it on Lomax. She swallowed hard, wondering what he was going to make of this, to what degree she was going to have to fight her corner. He sat back in his chair. Go on. Using equipment that I've developed, it's possible to read these memories directly from another person's brain. But how? We inject tiny receptors and transmitters into the bloodstream of the reader and the subject, and they travel to the brain. They pick up memories, like picking up radio waves, I suppose, and send them through a computer program which translates them and relays them into a VR headset. That's a very simplistic way of describing it, but you have to believe me. I can do this, and I think we should try to persuade Lomax that we should use the kit on him. Come on, Tom. Back me on this one. Say yes. He took his time, as if he was trying to slow down what she had said, replay it in his head and understand. You're telling me that we can look at Lomax's memories, find out if he killed Kaylee or not. She saw a mixture of disbelief, curiosity and intrigue. Then she saw the police officer kick in. We could find out if he killed the original victims for certain. I don't know. I mean, it's not like a video history. I can't just rewind his life and see everything. But I might see something that helps, incriminates him or suggests that he didn't do it. At least we'd know. Can I do this? Can I see into his memories? He was restrained, but she could tell he was interested. His arms twitched as he leaned forward slightly. There was no way she could let him do that. What if he started picking up residual memories, as Jimmy had put it, or phantoms, as she called them now, because they were so real it was like seeing ghosts, like the desert boy in the toilet at the hub, and realised that the kit wasn't as ready as it should be. There's not enough time to train you on the equipment. If we're going to do this, if you give me your permission, then we'd need to do it as soon as possible so that we don't waste time barking up the wrong tree. You can trust me. I'll relay everything I see. Is there any way of, I don't know, recording what you see in his mind or projecting it so that we can use it as evidence? Tom, let's get this straight. You're never going to be able to use this stuff in court. It won't be evidence you can prosecute with. She started to panic. Couldn't they keep this to themselves? No one needed to find out, did they? Not Carter, not the other officers, not the MOD. Why was he taking so long to agree? She waited for a moment, then, so, what do you say? I'm trying to get my head around it, Kira, that's all. She thought back to what Jimmy had said about a witness X. Maybe they could use the information they gleaned from the Cassandra. The machine itself would be witness X, protected by anonymity. The MOD would never find out that way. The point is that I get first-hand access to Lomax's memories. I get to see where he's been and what he's been doing. We need to find Isabel, and soon. He nodded slightly and she took it as encouragement. If I see anything that leads us to believe that he did it, She looked down at her hands. Then at least we can put this to bed once and for all, knowing that we got the right man. If I can't find evidence of Lomax committing these murders, then I might be able to find new lines of inquiry, things that show us where to go next. She studied his face as he mulled this over, and then said, If he killed Kaylee, then Lomax won't agree to it. That in itself might suggest he's guilty, she replied. But if he is innocent, then he will let us try, and we might see something that gives us an idea of what is going on. Tom reached up and rubbed his scar. Can we use it on him, even if he won't agree to it? This was what she had been trying to avoid with the MOD, brain hacking. But if a woman's life was at stake, would she be able to overcome her dilemma? If it's an accomplice, he'll kill Isabel in 3 days' time. If it's Lomax, she'll starve to death. We have to act. Let's use the tech on Lomax. Please, trust me. Tom stood up. Right, I'll call the governor of Rockwell straight away, see if we can get permission. Just over an hour later, Tom and Kira sat opposite the governor and Lomax, close together in a room almost too small for four people, a desk and two chairs. The fluorescent strip light hummed constantly and flickered intermittently. The window was a yellowing, opaque plexiglass square, high up on one of the grey walls. Lomax smelled of coffee and sweat. Kira held her breath. You're agreeing to this? Lomax asked, stunned, and Governor Bennett gave a brief, insincere smile. What's in it for you? Lomax asked her. She has her reasons, Tom said. I bet she does, Lomax sneered at Bennett. Doesn't look too good on the little lady that I was out and about, does it? There was still the hostility, the bravado, but underneath was also frustration. Or was it confusion? I've always run Rockwell as a centre of excellence with cutting-edge treatments and putting my prisoners' welfare at the top of my priorities, the governor said primly. This can only add to our list of firsts.
Trying to compensate for the fuck-up of my escape, you mean? Lomax said with a sneer.
Watch yourself, Lomax, the governor barked. Your chip shows clearly that you were down at the scrambles during your little trip out.
I didn't deny it. I was only getting a bit of pussy.
I don't tolerate language of that nature, barked the governor, but Tom cut her off. We need to find the real killer. I want to prove you didn't do it, Lomax.
He eyed Tom suspiciously.
What is it then? Some kind of lie detector machine?
He sounded curious now. Sort of, Kira said. I'm going to read your memories, she said, choosing her words carefully. I want to find anything that might help in our investigation. His expression changed back to suspicion, and he turned to Tom.
What if you see something else that incriminates me in another crime?
We're not interested in anything other than the Mitzpah murderers.
Yeah, you say that now.
He sat back and crossed his arms. The table shifted slightly across the floor as he knocked it.
But what if I don't want to let you look inside my brain?
He sneered, and Kira felt the bees in her chest beginning to mobilise. Governor Bennett pulled rank.
I've left documentation approving your transfer to Stoker's Keep. If you don't agree, then I'll make sure you rot there, a task I shall relish.
The gleam in her eyes verified the fact. Lomax's face fell.
You've got some fucking nerve, Bennett, he spat.
She gave a wry smile. You won't be top dog there, Lomax. There'll be no hot showers, privilege, screens, or any of the little luxuries we provide here at Rockwell. It will be purely work and punishment, 24/7. And who knows what fun the other inmates have planned for you? His shoulders dropped.
Do you know the regime at Stoker's Keep, Dr. Sullivan?
The governor asked, flicking a non-existent piece of fluff from her tweed suit.
It's notorious amongst the inmates. Not many people come out, and if they do, she said, turning a steady eye on Lomax, they're a shadow of their former selves.
You're telling us one thing,
Kira said, ignoring Bennett and focusing on Lomax. But the evidence is telling us something else. At the moment, with your DNA on the latest body... She let that one hang. Lomax's eyes darkened. On the other hand, if we can prove that this wasn't your kill... The word nearly stuck in her throat as she pushed away an image of Emma. She had to convince him. I can prove you're innocent, and then we can set about looking for the person who really did this. Could he tell she was lying? Would he be able to look into her eyes and see that the real reason she was doing this was to find the truth, see who killed her sister? Would he know that she didn't care one jot about what happened to the brute in front of her? Lomax leaned into her, seemed almost to be sniffing the air around her as he weighed this up. So, what's it going to be, Lomax? Tom demanded. Kira held her breath.
Don't look like I've got much choice, does it?
Lomax rolled his eyes. Tom remained poker-faced.
I thought as much, said Governor Bennett.
Did this mean he was innocent, or did he think he could beat the tech? You let us read your memories, Kira said flatly. We can get you out of here.
Win-win all round, I'd say, Tommy boy.
Kira relaxed a little.
When am I going to use this little lie detector of yours, Doc?
Tom looked to the governor.
I've given my permission for Danielson and another guard to take you to the lab this evening at 9 o'clock. Out and about under the cover of darkness, eh?
Lomax grinned.
You paying Danielson double time from your own pocket, Governor?
She didn't answer.
It's a shame you didn't come up with this invention of yours 14 years ago when they banged me up in here, he snarled at Kira.
Tom interrupted.
And you can keep your mouth shut about it, or the deal's off and you're going to Stoker's Keep.
Lomax rolled his eyes again.
You know, he began, looking at Tom and then back at Kira. If you find out that I'm innocent and I get out, regardless of the fact you helped, you put me in here in the first place, so I'm still gonna come for you.
Bennett jumped up and called in two of the guards.
Get him out of here,
she roared, and the guards pulled him off the chair and dragged him towards the door. He turned around and gave Kira one last grisly smile.
See you around, Doc.
The thought suddenly occurred to Kira. It will be down to me if Lomax gets out or not. And the sudden weight of responsibility was crushing. Chapter 22. Sunday, 4th of February, 2035, 9:08 p.m.
Are you sure you don't want a coffee?
Tom held up his own cup. It's getting late. Caffeine might help. He was only trying to distract her. Kira knew that, with idle chat and gossip about the officers they had worked with back in the day, but she could tell he was nervous too, though for different reasons. How could he possibly understand the risk she was about to undertake? She took a few deep breaths and said, I usually puke if I eat or drink anything beforehand. She could see Jimmy in the lab. He hadn't spoken to her since he'd arrived, but at least he was here.
What's that about? Mind travel sickness? Asked Tom.
Sort of. She couldn't manage a smile.
Do you think he'll be handcuffed? I won't let him near you.
God knows what I'm going to see in there. Tom studied the sculpture of the brain on the reception desk and ran his finger over one of the lines.
What's it like? Going into someone else's head?
Like watching home movies. That's the only way I can describe it. Flashes of different images and sometimes words come to my mind, or feelings that aren't mine overwhelm me. Unlike the movies, I sort of experience things. I can even smell things at times.
Her stomach was churning with anxiety.
Can you feel sensations? Does it hurt? He asked, curious. No, not physically. Although once I went into Jimmy's head and he had had rather a lot to drink the night before, and I caught his hangover. Believe me, I felt that.
Really?
Tom sounded amazed.
Yeah, it was weird.
She tried to manage a smile, but it must have looked more like a grimace.
Not fair, really. All of the hangover, none of the beer.
She thought about the other side effects she was suffering these days. They were getting more intense. She heard a noise outside. Oh God, was this it? She was glad Jimmy was there, but she wished he'd talked to her. Didn't she need her friends at a time like this? She saw Cassandra's bed move out, the lights turn from red to green. I can't guarantee any useful information, she told Tom. It's like I said, I don't know how much control we'll have over his memories. When I work with Jimmy, I ask him to focus on something specific, and that's usually what I see. I suppose to some degree it depends on what Lomax wants to show me. I'm not sure yet whether someone can withhold memories or not. We haven't tested for that. No worries. Just give it a go, Tom said. Give it a go, like it was a fairground game. I think the best tack to take is if you ask Lomax a few questions before we go down, try to tune him in to what we're looking for. She paused. Tom, say this doesn't work. Then what are we going to do next? How are we going to solve this? Is there anyone else we can use the tech on? She thought briefly of Ray Clark. You haven't even tried yet. Don't lose your bottle now. There was an edge to his voice. That was definitely a car outside. Her chest tightened. The buzzing began. Seriously, you don't have to do this, you know. His words were steady, but she saw the desperation in his eyes. Of course I do, she snapped. There's a young woman out there somewhere who could die, who will die, any day now, if I don't at least try this. It's on me. You're not responsible for her, he said slowly. I am. Tom, no. We were all on the team together back then. There was a quiet knock on the door, and her fight-or-flight instinct kicked in. She wanted to run. She wiped her palms on her thighs. Oh, God, I actually have to be Lomax, see the things he did, or might have done. Her fingers fumbled with the familiar lock. She was aware of Tom's eyes on her as she braced herself for Lomax to barge in, but Danielson led the way. Out of uniform, he looked less like a guard, more like a gangster, or even a Viking, Kira thought, now that she could see his blonde hair without his cap. He stood over 190 centimetres, his shoulders wide and strong, much bigger than Lomax. He wore all black, an expensive leather jacket. How could a guard afford such an item? Maybe the governor had paid him off after all. Lomax shuffled in behind him, cuffs and links on his wrists and ankles, like an old-school criminal on a chain gang. He was followed by another guard, a small black woman, her muscles neat and taut underneath her tight-fitting dark jacket and trousers. Kira greeted her, but she only had eyes for Lomax, eyes with yellow flecks in the brown irises. Kira suspected they were smart lenses with nano cameras. Whatever she was seeing would be relayed back to the governor at the prison. Told you I'd see you around, Doc. Nice gaff you've got here, Lomax said, as though he had just arrived at a party. Kira stepped outside the door to check that no one had seen Lomax come in. Carter Tech was halfway down a side street, affording some privacy. A black car was parked against the graffitied wall opposite, with its bright sprayed slogans of Fair Play for the Poor and Smash the Money Power. At least they hadn't used a prison van. Out of the corner of her eye, there was a movement. She froze. Further down the street, she saw a black shape was slumped against a wall in the shadows. Was it a man crouching? Was Brownrigg still spying on her? What would the MOD do to her if they knew she was still using the kit? Would they tell Carter? Her skin crawled. She jumped as a piece of litter blew up in a mini twister of a breeze. Was that a face? Eyes looking at her. No, it was only a pile of refuse bags slumped against the wall. Get a grip. She locked the door carefully, relieved for the time being. Jimmy came out of the lab. Take him through, he commanded, pointing the direction, and the guards led Lomax away. Ignoring Tom, Jimmy focused on Kira. Her heart was thumping furiously in her chest. The lights came on automatically as Lomax and the guards moved along the corridor towards the lab where Cassandra shone bright white behind the glass. "I'll go and start with a few questions and images to get Lomax into the right frame of mind," Tom said, and followed the others. When they were alone, Kira said to Jimmy, "I wasn't sure you were going to come." "I'm your friend, and I wouldn't let you walk home on your own in the dark, so there's no way I'm going to let you do something like this without me." He raised his hands, palms facing her, his face serious. "But I don't really agree with what you're doing here, Kira. I mean, it's bad enough breaking into the lab without telling Carter."
"We're not breaking in. I'm his business partner. Was. It's my kit."
"You're already suffering nightmares and asthma and God knows what else you haven't told me. It could be the receptors, the ones we injected into you. They should have passed out by now, but there's always the chance they could still be there, causing problems in your brain."
"Oh, Jimmy, leave it."
"No. We need to look into it. Tom needs to know that there are problems, so that he can keep an eye on you."
"What problems?"
They turned around to see Tom standing there. "Sorry, I forgot my coffee." He pointed to the cup by the sculpture of the brain.
"Is there something you omitted to tell me, Kira?"
"Omitted. Police talk."
"About the asthma and the soldier?"
Jimmy sounded annoyed.
"If Kira's going to be taking risks for you, then you should know some of the side effects."
"For you? Was Jimmy jealous?"
"Fuck's sake, Jimmy," Kira mouthed.
"Should we be doing this?" Tom asked. Jimmy looked back at Kira.
"It's your call."
"Yes, it's my call," she said fiercely. "We're doing it."
"What about a soldier?"
Tom gave her that expression. One that used to be so familiar, the dog with the bone. He wasn't going to let this drop.
"We'll talk later," she said. "Let's get this over with."
They moved into the lab. Jimmy made some adjustments on the screen and glanced up to see Tom staring at him. "We used to use the computer to read the memories, but the images were far too low grade." He passed the VR headset to Kira and helped her attach a few electrodes directly to her temples. She didn't look at him, even though he was so close. Jimmy went on. "We found that the human brain could decipher the images much more accurately." Tom came over to look. Was he trying to smooth things over with Jimmy? She didn't need them joining forces.
"It's as though the brain is speaking a language that can't be fully interpreted by the computer, so we need a human reader. It's like if you listen to another language, you might hear the words and get some of the meaning, but you would miss the nuances, and then it doesn't make enough sense. The receptors and the headset work together to provide a fuller picture."
"Are you sure it's safe?" Tom asked Jimmy.
"I mean, you said..." "Considering the clarity of interpretation the human brain can give, it seems to be worth the risk for the quality of information," Kira snapped, anxious to get on.
Jimmy had already injected her with receptors. She watched as he injected Lomax with the stimulators and put the needle in the yellow sharps box.
"Did you ask him what you wanted to, Tom?"
"Yes." He held up his mini screen to show her, then put it into his leather bag. Lomax lay, still cuffed and strapped for extra security. Jimmy had sent Danielson and the female guard back outside the lab on the other side of the glass, where they could keep an eye on him, but not overhear the details. "Cosmo, prepare for transference," Jimmy commanded, and the bed on which Lomax was lying began moving into Cassandra's center.
"Welcome to the jungle, Doc," Lomax boomed. "Enjoy the show."
"9:18 p.m. I remembered the woman with the dark hair from all those years back. She seemed to sense me outside the door when they took him into Carter Tech. The website is a mishmash of techno bullshit and crass slogans, where imagination and innovation come together. They do tracking chip work. Is that why they brought him here? But I don't think it's official business, as the guards weren't in uniform. After the girl in the ice, it became like second nature to follow people. I followed the women that I chose. I followed the police officers. I watched their confusion about the connection between the two women until they found the box. I saw them picking around the corpses like carrion birds, looking for clues. All the time, I was there. I followed the psychologist. I even saw them together, alone, her and the policeman. I hid in the everyday ordinariness of life. I didn't stand too close. I didn't look too long. I always kept my distance. Before that, I'd only followed the bastard, knew his every move. I knew where he was, who he was with, what he was doing. How else was I to trap him? He could never be punished for what he did to my family, but I could get him punished for something else. I chose the victims carefully. I chose the time and place carefully. It had to be when he was around, when it could be proven by witnesses, by CCTV, that he had been there. The DNA was more tricky, but for everything else, it looked as though he had done it. I knew it would take time for him to be caught, but I was prepared to wait. I'd waited for my revenge since I was a child, hadn't I? What difference would a few more years make? But I remember her, Kira, the psychologist. I was in the cafe that night. I had been following her. Some might say coincidence. Some might say destiny, fate. I sat close to her, at the next table. Then a woman and a child came in. A beautiful little girl, like my Elise. I even patted her on the head as I walked past her in the cafe, and she gave me a radiant smile. But the women hardly noticed me. They were so deep in conversation. Later, when the deed had been done and the rush had dissipated, I thought back to that little girl, how I'd left her motherless, and I cried my heart out. Chapter 23. Sunday, 4th of February, 2035, 9:28 p.m. A glass flew over Kira's head in a poorly lit, stuffy bar and splintered against a bare plaster wall. She watched as her fist, Lomax's fist, smashed into a man's face. She heard the crunch of contact and the man flew backwards, an arc of blood and saliva spraying from his mouth, marking his trajectory as he fell. A cheer went up all round, animals honouring their pack leader. She took the headset off for a moment and rubbed her face. Jimmy gave her a thumbs-up sign, his face concerned. "Don't let your fear hold you back. Think of Isabel. Think of Riley." She gave the thumbs-up in reply and then, like someone about to dive into murky water, took a deep breath and replaced her headset. She shifted on the recliner, agitated. "Come on, Kira. You can do this." When she tuned in again, the blood, bar stools and smell of beer had disappeared, replaced by a worn leather sofa, cracked with age, a table set for dinner, a small sprig of freesia in a tiny, clumsily made pottery vase. What was that she could smell? Chicken and herbs. In front of her she saw Lomax's hands again. One gripped a woman by her shiny black hair as she cowered in front of him on her knees, her eyes squeezed shut, waiting for the blow, her hands up in surrender. Lomax's other hand was a white-knuckled fist. Looking through his eyes, under the table, nearly invisible in the darkness, Kira saw a young child, a boy trembling in the shadows. Then another child's face appeared from behind him, a little girl, no more than a toddler, her eyes wide with fear. The boy pushed her back down. Kira's instincts to protect the children boiled as she watched the ugly scene unfold. Hardcore pornography filled her mind immediately. Violent jabbing, writhing bodies, cries of pain. Her stomach roiled, but then an anger rose in her. Lomax would want her to see this. He was taunting her. Suddenly she was standing alone on a dark road, wide, smooth black tarmac underfoot. The Croxley estate was proudly emblazoned in wrought iron fencework above the red brick boundary wall, silhouetted against the yellow light of the few remaining street lamps on the other side. Kira glanced down at her body, at his body, the tattooed arms, the grey prison sweatpants. In front of her lay derelict chaos, full of keep out signs, some printed onto shiny boards belonging to the council, some made by the residents themselves, a mixture of spray paint and swear words. The graffiti also indicated which sordid and illegal services could be bought where. It was easy to tell the sex workers from the lay addicts. The addicts ducked into the doorways to hide, but the male and female prostitutes suddenly came to life, showing off their wares like a mechanical puppet display. It was as though an architect's drawing of the ideal estate, a sunny place with people walking hand in hand in brightly coloured clothes, blossoming trees and shiny cars, had been plunged into a nightmare. It was sickening for her to be in his body. It was as if an infection was travelling into her. Kira could feel his powerful strides as he moved along, the weight of his being. She could sense his sexual desire, built up after so long incarcerated, his predatory instincts, as he made his way over to a stick-thin woman, frail and vulnerable, his excitement rising. The thin woman stood in the doorway. She inclined her head to the front door, beckoning. He cut across the patch of rough earth that might have served one time as a lawn and moved towards the house. A candle glowed softly in the window, and Kira could smell incense, patchouli and roses. Soft music travelled through the door, out onto the night air, contrasting with the stark brutality of the estate. As Lomax approached the door, Kira heard footsteps, someone running along the pavement nearby. Lomax's body tensed. He moved his head slightly, as though he was an animal, using echolocation. The noise stopped close by, and Lomax turned slowly, shoulders relaxed, chin up. A hooded man, smaller than Lomax, stood motionless facing him. The top of the nearby street lamp dangled. His face was hidden in shadows.
Fuck off! I was here first.
Lomax moved to go to the house, but noticed that the man stayed in the same spot, and Kira felt her body, Lomax's body, stiffen.
You want to pay to watch, mate?
Lomax growled. She could feel the rage growing in his guts. The man swayed slightly from foot to foot, clenching his hands into fists and then releasing.
I'm not afraid of you,
the man shouted. Lomax took a step forward and then began to laugh.
You're fucking joking.
Did he recognise the man? His voice, maybe. Was it what he said? When the stranger didn't move away, Kira could feel irritation in Lomax, mixed with an instinct for brutality, and she knew this was a dangerous cocktail for the woman waiting in the house for him. With a grunt, Lomax moved towards the other man. His opponent stood his ground, but Lomax grabbed him by his top and swung him with great force, so the man rolled over and over on the road and finally came to a stop. He lay still for a moment, and Lomax shook his head and went towards the house. As he got to the door, he looked back over his shoulder. The man was back up on his feet, coming closer. His face was grazed, his forehead bleeding down onto one eye, which flickered with the drips, the blood black in the darkness. His hooded jacket was torn and hanging from one shoulder. Kira saw that under his top, he wore a t-shirt with a familiar logo, the two snakes wrapped around a winged staff, that she had seen frequently at the hospital, on ambulances. All the doctors and nurses wore them on their uniforms. Was he a medical worker? He was no match for Lomax, that was certain. He stood, clenching and unclenching his fists again, stepping from one foot to another. Lomax barged into him, leaning down to press his forehead against the man's. Kira could feel the man's resistance, his skull hard on Lomax's. She tried to take in details of his face, but it was difficult, as she was too close. Under the cut on his forehead, his left eye was sticky with blood. Lomax spun quickly and caught the man on the side of the face with a ferocious punch. He fell hard, and Lomax went into the house and shut the door. As Lomax grabbed the woman roughly by the shoulders, Kira took in every detail of her face. The sharp cheekbones, the hollow eyes, the overly plucked eyebrows and heavy makeup. She had never seen this woman before. It wasn't one of the Mitzpah murderers. She knew each and every one of their faces in detail. It certainly wasn't Kaylee Carmichael. It must be the prostitute who had given Lomax his alibi. Lomax pushed her out of the way and leaned over to look out of the window. The man was nowhere to be seen. Where had he gone? He didn't seem to have had a vehicle. Did he live nearby? Was he known to Lomax? Kira willed Lomax to go back outside, but he was intent on the woman now. Kira was revolted by the feelings of sexuality that were seeping into her from Lomax. The moment the violence began, reeling with nausea and disgust, she pulled her headset off and threw it across the floor. Immediately there was a screeching in her head, like white noise, which threatened to rip her skull apart. She grabbed her head in her hands as the noise seemed to increase in pitch, and then finally it subsided. When it fell silent, she leaned forward on the recliner and vomited, splattering the floor in front of her, startling Jimmy and Tom. "Side effect of transference," she told Tom, once her nausea had quelled. Jimmy passed her some paper towels. "You look like death warmed up. Are you okay?" He had never appeared so anxious about a transference before. Should she be worried too? The awful pain in her brain began to lift a little, and she muttered, "Don't fuss, Jim." She took a few deep breaths. Her eyes had a pre-migraine halo, and her mouth was dry. "Water." She pointed to a nearby jug and glass that Jimmy must have put there earlier. "God, yes, sorry," Tom said as he took a glass, filled it with water and passed it to her. She sipped at it, wiped away the cold sweat with some of the paper towel she was holding, and then sat back, trying not to vomit again. She was embarrassed. Danielson and the other guard were stood watching everything. Lomax was snoring now. "Anything?" asked Tom. She lay back on the recliner. "He's been to the Scrambles for a prostitute." Her voice cracked. God, her head hurt. "He beat a woman in front of her kids. He has a particularly niche taste in porn. But I didn't see any of our women. He was wearing his prison sweats, so it was the right date. He's a nasty, violent bastard, but there's nothing that said he killed any of our victims." "You don't think he saw Kaylee or was with the body?" Tom asked more urgently. "I didn't see anything like that, but it doesn't necessarily mean he didn't." "Fuck," Tom said, scratching at his scar. She wanted to get up but felt too woozy. "I was hoping we'd get more than that too, Tom." "Sorry, I didn't mean..." She knew Jimmy too well. His expression was one of, "Was it worth it?" "I should have stayed longer, but I couldn't do it." "No, you did well to stick it out," Jimmy reassured her. He rubbed her shoulder, then pointed to her glass. "Drink your water." She sipped at it again. "There was a man watching him when he went to the woman's house," she told Tom, his eyes narrowed. "Go on." "Lomax said, I got here first and hit him." "Could you identify him?" Somewhere in her mind, she knew she had seen a specific clue. What had that been? For the moment, she couldn't recall. Was it his face? No, that had been covered in blood. Was it his t-shirt? Yes, that was it. But she couldn't pinpoint it. It was as though she was reaching into a dark cupboard to find something that was just out of grasp of her fingers. Was memory loss going to be another side effect that she would have to suffer? She wasn't going to let on to Jimmy. "No, it was dark. I couldn't see his face." Jimmy pointed at her glass and she drank again. "But they didn't seem to know each other." "I couldn't tell. It was very brief, but Lomax laughed when he saw him." "Laughed?" She shrugged. and looked over to Lomax lying at the centre of Cassandra, a huge hulking brute fast asleep. He's a nasty bastard, but I didn't see anything to say he was a killer. She tried to get up, but Jimmy put his hand on her shoulder. Take your time. Sit there until you feel better. I'll drive you home, said Tom. You can collect the car tomorrow. No, give me 5 minutes and I'll be fine, she insisted. Tom indicated to the guards, and they came in to collect their prisoner. They woke him roughly. He shuffled off the bed and moved towards the door, urged on by the guards. Who did you see at the scrambles, Lomax? Asked Tom. The man you hit, Kira added. He grinned at her sleepily. I told you, I saw the woman, no one else. Tom glanced at Kira. He believed her, didn't he? So then, when do I get out? Lomax asked sleepily as the guards rearranged his bindings. It's going to take more than that, Tom said. We didn't find out what we needed. If Lomax was disappointed by this, he didn't show it. Oh well, I had a nice sleep and woke up with a hard-on. Win-win, I say. Danielson manhandled him towards the door. The female guard gave the lab a once-over and then followed. As Lomax shuffled out, he gave Kira a lecherous grin. See you in my dreams, Doc, he said cheerfully, and whistled down the corridor in time to the chains on his ankles jangling. Back in her flat, behind the locked door, Lomax's last words swam around her head as Kira fell into a fitful sleep. See you in my dreams, Doc. At some point in the dead of night, she was disturbed by a loud thud. She opened her eyes and lay listening in the darkness. Was there someone in the flat, or was she dreaming? She reached out for her comset. A shuffling sound coming from behind the bedroom door, something being dragged across the tiled floor? The hairs on her skin shot upright. Her breathing was shallow,